Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on mind control, world control. Travistock Institute for Human Relations, better known by insiders as the Freud Hilton, has been a major nexus for the worldwide psychological manipulation that has taken place over the past 50 years. The Travistock story, at least the public version of it, begins immediately after World War II, when members of British military intelligence created the Institute. In its own literature, Travistock is described as an organization of dynamic psychiatry, which was intended to practice what they termed societry on the planet as a whole, and what I term world mind control. British military intelligence itself, in the persons of many of its chief players, has been aimed at a one-world government since its inception. British Secret Service directors, on an almost one-for-one basis, have been advocates of Fabian socialism. It is alleged that Travistock was set up much earlier than its announced inception, over 20 years prior, in 1921, by Major John Rawlings Rees, on the orders of the Round Table's Royal Institute of International Affairs, also known as Chatham House. The RIIA, along with the American Council on Foreign Relations, had been founded in 1919 during the Versailles Peace Conference, both being early New World Order executive arms. Rees was the man who dreamed of building a society in which it is possible for any member of any social group to be treated psychiatrically, without resort to legal means, and even if they do not desire such treatment. Now, at the end of World War II, Rees called for the creation of psychological shock troops who would fan out from the Travistock Institute to engineer the future direction of society. Well, in 1932, Travistock was put under the directorship of the German psychologist Kurt Lewin. Lewin was a founder of the National Training Laboratories and director of the Harvard Psychological Clinic. And an odd qualification for a psychiatrist, I think, one of the key players in the original creation of the OSS in the United States. Now, Lewin is credited with much of the original Travistock research into mass brainwashing, applying the results of repeated trauma and torture and mind control to society at large. If terror can be induced on a widespread basis into a society, Lewin has stated, when society reverts to a blank slate, a situation where control can easily be instituted from an exterior point. So, put it another way. By the creation of controlled chaos, the population of a nation can be brought to the point where it willingly submits to greater control. Lewin maintained that society must be driven into a state equivalent to an early childhood situation. He termed this societal chaos fluidity. Travistock's focus in the early days was on strategic warfare studies, in particular of Germany, with emphasis on the re-education of that errant New World Order colony. During World War II, many of the Institute's members, including its founder, Rees, ran the British Psychological Warfare Directorate and subsidiary organizations based in the United States. After World War II, Tavistock can functionally be considered to have become a part of Britain's Psychological Warfare Bureau, now working on projects dealing with the brainwashing of large populations, such as Germany. Tavistock is governed by what it calls an invisible college, echoing antique occultist terminology and reminding one that British intelligence was founded by Freemasons and remains deeply Freemasonic to this day. The original use of the term invisible college prior to the announced creation of Tavistock was Rees's reference to an informal association that he had created of all of the psychiatrists then working in the British military. For funding, the Tavistock Institute relies on large grants from anonymous benefactors, with no doubt a substantial portion coming directly from the government, along with grants from the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Institute, and the World Health Organization, and the British Home Office. Tavistock is also interlinked worldwide with a vast network of other organizations and think tanks, including UNESCO, the World Health Organization, the World Federation for Mental Health, and the RAND Corporation. Tavistock is simply a front group for the psychological imposition of the New World Order on the planet, and its main philosophic tool is the Hegelian dialectic framed in the terms of Lewin. The Rockefellers have always been prominent in deciding the course of Tavistock. According to the official chronicler of that group, the Rockefeller Foundation, before making us a grant, would need to be satisfied not only by our policies, but also with the persons to carry them out. In a Tavistock-funded profile of the group, it stated that the role of the Institute has been, A, the invention of the command psychiatrist as a medical-social role carrying out reconnaissance in a large structure and defined group, leading to the ascertainment and recognition of critical problems in the sphere of human relations and management. B, the invention of social psychiatry as a policy science permitting preventative technical intervention in large-scale problems. C, the fashioning of a whole series of military institutions which concretely and effectively implemented the policies advocated. And D, the invention of new types of therapeutic communities. And E, the invention of cultural psychiatry. Capability nurtured in the Tavistock for the psychiatrist to work with lay personnel, in this case the military, in a collaborative partnership. In other words, the strategy of command psychiatry and the developments to which it led were psychodynamically conceived and based. I'm going to interject something right here. Notice that the military is involved with Tavistock, and what we saw at Abu Ghraib prison over here, that is the torture, the psychological conditioning of prisoners to get information, or to control those prisoners. Whether it was for military intelligence or whether it was for some other purpose is irrelevant and immaterial. What went on at Abu Ghraib is just the tip of the iceberg. That's the one that got caught. That's the one that we know about. But it goes on everywhere in every prison around the world. In fact, it goes on right here in the local jails in our local county. Sheriffs, highway patrolmen, policemen in general are all taught and trained how to get information out of people. It's just a part of this thing called mind control. I've observed over the years people's inability to keep their mouths shut. The police appeal to their vanity. And then they just open their mouths and out spews all of the confessions and admissions that the police need to convict them. The same thing happens when they bring a witness in and they want that witness to testify against somebody. Let me give you an illustration of mind control as it applies to a rape case. 30% of all rape convictions are false. We know that from DNA testing since 1987. But every rape conviction requires an eyewitness who testifies, that is the man that raped me. 30% of the time they're incorrect. The way they get these women to testify against or to identify the rapist is a classic of mind control. It's the power of suggestion. A woman is raped, and she's traumatized in the process. She reports to the police, and the police go out based upon her description, and they round up as many known rapists as they can find, you know, in the local area. So they get five or six guys, and they bring these five or six guys in. The woman who has been traumatized, this probably occurred at night, is unable to recognize any of these people as being her attacker. So in the process, she looks at him, talks to the police, and says, I can't recognize anybody. Now, the police don't have a clue as to who did it either. But they have somebody that they're pretty sure that they can probably convict for the crime if they could get this woman to identify him. But the woman now can't identify him. So in the lineup, they select the pigeon, they select the guy that they want to convict, and then they go back to this woman and they say, now take a look at that number three in the lineup there. We picked him up just a mile from where you said this rape took place. This guy's a convicted rapist, and he fits the description of the man that you told us about. And we think he's the guy, but we can't arrest him or convict him or prosecute him without your say-so. So you have to identify him. Take a good look at him and see if that isn't the guy that raped you. You see the power of suggestion here? This is not this woman's independent observation based upon her memory. This is the mind controller who's telling her, this is the guy that we think did it. Now, the woman believes that, well, if the police think this guy did it, he must be the guy. Now she persuades herself, based upon her mind control handler, the policeman, who says, take a careful look at number three, because this guy was just a mile from the site. He fits the description that you gave, and we think he's the guy. So, now, she comes back and she says, yes, it's number three. She comes into court and testifies against number three. Fortunately, today we have a little better way to tell. We can tell by DNA sampling whether or not this is the guy. But see my point? In years past, we didn't have DNA, and DNA is what now shows us that mind control is what convinces these women in 30% of the cases that this is the guy. And we now know. We now know 30% are bogus. And it all has to do with the power of persuasion, the power of selling you this idea. Travis Stock, born from the collaboration of the international moneyed elite, military intelligence, and the materialistic psychiatry community, refers to its self-admitted military orientation as Operation Phoenix, again a Freemasonic symbol that it shares with the infamous Vietnam War Association program. One is reminded of the Freemasonic legend Ordo Ab Chao, Order Out of Chaos, which could just as easily describe the Travis Stock method of destroying a target subject or a target population prior to reprogramming, the Travis Stock modus operandi. You see, they've turned the entire German nation into a nation that now is self-effacing and say, oh my God, we killed all these Jews and it's all our part. All our fault. No, the people of Germany didn't kill all those Jews. It was a small group of people called the Nazis. There were some people that are actually guilty. But now they've got the whole German nation self-effacing and beating themselves and paying reparations and etc. because they've been convinced. That's the entire nation has been brainwashed, has been mind-controlled into believing that it's all their fault and that they have to make restitution. Well, if they believe it and they want to make restitution, of course, that's their choice in life, isn't it? It's a decision that they have to make. But it's not a decision being made from their own free will, and that's my point. And it's not the woman identifying the rapist from her own free will and her own knowledge. It's her mind control handler that has sold her that bill of goods. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and it has our radio logs, schedule of archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. We're talking about the Travis Dock Institute, an agency of mind control and world control. Throughout the Travis Dock literature, either official or Travis Dock inspired, they reiterate their global vision and make it clear that the Institute is intended to work its long-term societry, that's spelled S-O-C-I-E-T-R-Y, societry, on the world regardless of the wishes of individuals who inhabit it. So we're going to impose this upon you whether you like it or not. And one of the most successful of Travis Dock offshoot organizations is what was originally known as the National Training Laboratories, and now the NTL, the National Training Laboratory Institute for Applied Behavioral Sciences, founded in 1947. It's located in Bethel, Maine. The mission of the NTL is to give Lewin-inspired group dynamic sessions to America leaders. This is your political leaders. These are your bureaucrats. And again, during group sessions, dissonance or stress is introduced to destroy the individual's previous beliefs. And then a new group-oriented personality is coached forth. This is the primary technical method used by a myriad of Travis Dock-influenced sensitivity groups like Al-Anon and Esalen. Since the 1950s, the NTL has processed the majority of America's corporate leaders in its programs, while simultaneously running the same programs for various segments of the government, including the Navy, the Department of Education, the State Department. None dare call it mind control. Eric Trist, the chairman of Travis Dock's governors, 1963, described his and the Travis Dock work on mass national brainwashing, delineating it in detail. His theory of social turbulence, based upon the theories of Hegel, although again, Trist is far more quick to cite Lewin. Trist postulated that the administering of a series of traumatizing shocks upon a society would destabilize it, lowering the overall character of the society's reasoning. Trist suggested that by late 1963, the world had moved into a condition of permanent social turbulence that would serve to usher in a new condition of society, a new paradigm, and a new possibility for remaking the face of the planet. The nature of the permanent social turbulence that Trist foresaw is further defined in a book published in 1975 by one of Trist's associates, Fred Emery. Now, the book, Features or Futures We Are In, likens the condition of current-day society to the violent punk welfare state of Anthony Burgess's novel A Clockwork Orange, written in the 1960s. Now, Emery, in Reflection of Trist, also trumpets Hegel. He describes the first stage of the breakdown of society as being superficiality, in which previous societal values are questioned and discarded. He uses as an example of this the death of the Judeo-Christian paradigm. The next inevitable state is segmentation, in which societal institutions break down, resulting in a reversion to paranoid groups of individuals hostile to one another. The next stage in the breakdown of society would be the launching of a fascist movement akin to the Nazis. Then the final and most disrupted state, or disreputed state of society, is termed disassociation, in which the individual becomes the entirety of society for himself and is isolated from other members of the group. The dominant culture of the society becomes fantasy and superstition. According to Trist, the current wired society, where the main interaction of the individual is with electronic media, is only a metaphor for disassociation. Cyberpunks, New Agers, and couch potatoes take note. It is interesting to note that the same progression can be seen in the microcosm with the induction of the multiple personality, an oft-asserted goal of intelligence agency brain-banging. In May of 1967, at Queen Elizabeth's palatial estate in Deauville, France, a conference was convened, and it was intended to update participants on ongoing projects of the Tavistock Network. This was the Conference on Transatlantic Technological Imbalance and Collaboration, sponsored by the Scientific and Technological Committee of the North Atlantic Assembly and the Foreign Policy Research Institute. That's a mouthful. Among the projects mentioned at the conference were the collaboration of Emory and Trist on social turbulence and the SRI Tavistock Images of Man project. Participants in the conference included Tavistock's Heartland, Cleveland, Willis Harmon of the Tavistock offshoot Stanford Research Institute, Dr. Zygmunt Brzezinski, the future Carter National Security Advisor and the Trilateral Commission's founding executive director, and Fred Emery, who had earlier delineated the stages of societal disintegration in his Futures We're In. Other participants were Dr. Aurelio Pecci, later to head the Zero Growth Fixated Club of Rome, then chairman of the Economic Committee of the Atlantic Institute, an important NATO think tank, and Sir Alexander King and Sir Solly Zuckerman, advisors to the British Crown. Now, fleshing out the hologram of elitist New World Order planning is the information that Brzezinski is believed by many in Western intelligence organizations to be a KGB mole, recruited by British roundtabler and Rothschild Warburg agent William Yandel Elliott. Henry Kissinger is also linked to this group. Reportedly, after being recruited to the KGB, homosexual blackmail ring focused on the EICOM G2 headquarters in Oberammergau, Germany, at the end of the Second World War. Kissinger was a member of the U.S. Army 970th Counterintelligence Corps, involved in creating the Nazi rat lines that enabled many prominent Nazis to escape prosecution at the end of World War II. Kissinger's reported mentor was Fritz Kramer of the Pentagon Plans Division, who also groomed Alexander Haig, Kramer's secret life during World War II, according to the deceased conspiracy researcher May Brussel, was that of a special lieutenant to Hitler. What does it matter whose side you're on, the controllers might say. Both sides in the World War, or for that matter, the Cold War, only served to foster the synthesis of the New World Order. The principles that were agreed on at the Tavistock Conference will sound very familiar to those who have been following the reshaping of human institutions and values by the New World Order. These include the belief that man should not dominate nature, but instead become a part of it, with no more rights and privileges than, say, the purple-assed baboon in the wild. Governments are obsolete and will be replaced by other more encompassing institutions. Mankind is moving into a de-industrialized, post-technological society, an information age, the age of Aquarius, again, aborigines with laptop computers. The primary impetus towards the evolution to the post-technological society are the repeated shocks and chaos taking place around us every day, including such events as the Kennedy assassination, the Vietnam War, and the assault on traditional institutions and thinking by the psychedelic counterculture. This philosophy was described exactly by Dr. William Sargent of the Tavistock Institute clear back in 1957 in his book Battle for the Mind, A Physiology of Conversion and Brainwashing. Again, the idea is that the micro reflects the macro, the occultist dictum as above, so below. Now, Sargent said that various types of beliefs can be implanted in many people after brain function has been sufficiently disturbed by accidentally or deliberately induced fear, anger, or excitement. Of the results caused by such disturbances, the most common is temporarily impaired judgment and heightened suggestibility. Its various group manifestations are sometimes classed under the heading of herd instinct and appear most spectacularly in wartime, during severe epidemics, and in all similar periods of common danger, which increase anxiety and so individual and mass suggestibility. Let me just pause here for a moment and show you something. Right after the attacks on 9/11, people became very disoriented, very illogical in their thinking. And when it was suggested to them that we go to war, yeah, that's what we need to do, we need to go to war, without thinking about, well, gee, what's the long-term consequence of this war? What's the cost of this war? Now, when President Bush suggested that a preemptive strike against Iraq was necessary, About 75% round numbers supported the war. Now it's down to 50%. What happened to the 25%? You see, after reflective thinking, after we have observed the outcome of our actions for a year, 25% of those people have now come to the conclusion, out of the whole, 25% opposed the war, 75% agreed with it. But now another 25% are opposing the war. Now it's about 50-50. Why did that 25% change their minds? Well, because they were susceptible to being changed because of the mind controllers who took advantage of them right after the shock of the event. So you take the woman who has just been raped. The shock of the event destabilizes her mental capacity and function. Now, once she has been destabilized, the policeman, her handler, comes in and says, "We think it's number three. Here's why we think it's number three." The police don't have any more idea as to whether it's number one, number six, number three, number two, number five. They don't get a clue as to who it is. They weren't there. They didn't see anything. The woman who is giving a description of what she thinks she saw is doing this from a position of extreme mental trauma, destabilized mental faculty. But once she identifies the guy, now she's stuck with that identification. She'll come into court, and although she may intellectually say to herself, "I don't think that's the guy. It doesn't seem like he's the guy. He doesn't sound like the guy. But I've already identified him. I can't change now." The trial takes place a year later, and she comes in and repeats the same lie that she told earlier. She may actually now believe the very lie that she is telling. She may have now been converted or persuaded. And people who are under the influence of mind control actually believe the lies that they're telling themselves. So they're not lying because they want to deceive you. They're lying because they actually believe the lies that they've been taught. Now, isn't that a fine kettle of fish? Hang on, we'll be right back with more. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by pre-arrangement only. The law school is, or the law hour is carried worldwide on the internet. All of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at area code 1-417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Well, out of the Travis Dock Conference also came Zbigniew Brzezinski, 1968. He wrote a book called The Technotronic Age that posits an information society whose basis of competition is replaced by amusement focus based on spectator spectacles, mass sports and TV, providing an opiate for increasingly purposeless masses of people. New forms of social control may be needed to limit the indiscriminate exercise by the individual of their new powers. The possibility of extensive chemical mind control will call for a social definition of the common criteria of restraint as well as utilization. And some think that Guy Debord's society of the spectacle isn't literal. In the technotronic age, the nation-state as a fundamental unit of man's organized life has ceased to be the principal creative force. International banks and multinational corporations are acting and planning in terms that are far in advance of the political concepts of the nation-state. Brzezinski also says of the technotronic age that at the same time the capacity to assert social and political control over the individual will vastly increase, and it will soon be possible to assert almost continuous control over every citizen and to maintain up-to-date files containing even the most personal details about health and personal behavior of every citizen in addition to the more customary data. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. Power will gravitate into the hands of those who control information. Our existing institutions will be supplanted by pre-crisis management institutions, the task of which will be to identify in advance likely social crises and to develop programs to cope with them, such as the Homeland Security Agency and like institutions that have been created since 9/11. And this will encourage tendencies through the next several decades toward a technotronic era, a dictatorship leaving even less room for political procedures as we know them today. Finally, looking ahead to the end of the century, the possibility of biochemical mind control and genetic tinkering with man, including beings which will function like men and reason like them as well, could give rise to some difficult questions. A book written at the same time by the conference chairman, Arello Pecci, was titled The Chasm Ahead, and it too echoed the prevailing elitist themes. Pecci reiterated that a one-world government was the only solution to the problems of the world. Also required was that Russia and the U.S. would have to enter into partnership in global planning and enforcement, a theme that has become increasingly obvious in recent years with the Spetsnaz setting up shop in Peoria and Tulsa, and Clinton trying to lease the Long Beach Naval Yards to the mainland Chinese. One of the foot soldiers of Travis Dock, currently fallen from grace, at least in the eyes of the American people, is, believe it or not, Newt Gingrich. The truth about Newt exists much in contradiction to his image as a staunch upholder of Republican ideals and conservative family values. Gingrich is, in fact, another Trojan horse whose mentor is the futurist Alvin Toffler. Toffler's book, The Third Wave, describes the current technocratic takeover of the world, the acquisition of virtually all wealth by a tiny elite, and the relegation of the vast majority of the populace to a third world foraging in the garbage heaps of the rich. According to Gingrich, speaking to a crowd of yuppies at a Congress on Democracy in Virtual America in the mid to late 60s, I read Drucker's The Age of Discontinuities, Boulding's The Meaning of the 20th Century, and Bell's Beyond Post-Industrial Society, all of which were precursors to the first popularizer of this notion, which was Future Shock, which was written basically a quarter of a century ago. Now, those four books described everything that we're living through for all practical purposes today. And nothing has changed over the past quarter century. I've worked with the Tofflers for 20 years in trying to figure out this interesting question. Since all this is intellectually obvious, then why can't we just break through? Toffler is a protege of Kenneth Boulding, who was one of Tavistock's leading lights in the United States, and, according to his wife, founded the Revolutionary Students for a Democratic Society. Boulding and his wife were responsible for much of the bridge building between the Fabian societies of Tavistock and the New Left in the 1960s. Gingrich revealed his not-so-hidden roots when he mentioned the Anticipatory Democracy Project in his introduction to the Third Wave. AD, as it is termed, was a project fielded by Tavistock in the 1960s, intended to bring about a New Age shift toward anything but traditional values. Unless it is, of course, the Wellesian open conspiracy, traditional values of the elite controllers. And among the latter projects that would be created by participants in the AD project would be the Malthusian Club of Rome, or the Malthusian Club of Rome, and the Carter administration's Global 2000 plan. Gingrich was ushered into the Tavistock orbit in 1965 when, as an undergraduate at Emory University, a professor at Georgia Tech introduced him to the work of Boulding and Toffler. After getting his Ph.D. at Tulane, Gingrich took a teaching job at West Georgia State College outside of Atlanta, the East Coast node of the humanist psychology movement. One of Gingrich's closest associates was the anything-but-Republican Jimmy Carter, who put Newt in charge of an AD pilot project called Goals for Georgia, and it was only later that Gingrich got his calling as a banner waver for the new right. All right, we're looking at Operation Mind Control. This is mind control, world control. And, of course, the purpose behind it all is the new world government, the new world age, or the new age movement. Now, the shock troops behind all of this begins back in 1944. And while World War II was still raging, Lord Norman, his name was Lord Montagu Norman, resigned from his position at the Bank of England. Norman, a man prone to repeated mental problems and hospitalizations and who had been a staunch supporter of Hitler prior to the war, announced the beginning of the British National Association for Mental Health, which was in fact only a renaming of the National Council of Mental Hygiene, a group that had been heavily involved in pushing eugenics and eugenics programs prior to the war. With Hitler's downfall, eugenics had an extremely unsavory odor that needed to be deodorized with a name change. Certainly, eugenics never vanished, as witness, for example, the thousands of women involuntarily sterilized in Sweden and other European countries until the mid-1970s. And the NAMH functioned as a Travestock front organization, which would soon become the controlling body for world psychology, along with world psychiatry. An examination of the officers of NAMH provides clues as to its direction. Richard Austin Butler, the pro-Nazi deputy foreign minister to Lord Halifax, became its president. Lord Halifax's son-in-law, the Earl of Feversham, became its chairman. Vice chairman was Norman's wife, Priscilla Rinton's Wursthorn Norman, a vocal proponent of eugenics programs and the Nazis, who had ousted German rearmament by releasing £6 million British pounds in Czech gold to the Germans after the occupation of Czechoslovakia. Then there was Otto Niemeyer, Norman's assistant at the Bank of England, who became the treasurer of the organization, and perhaps the group should have been titled the Nazi Association for Mental Health. Notice the close working relationship between the Nazis and the British psychiatric aristocracy. In 1948, an International Congress on Mental Health at the Ministry of Health in London was convened by Norman. The Congress was hosted by the British National Association, whose patron was the Duchess of Kent, widow of the Grand Master of Masons and mother of the Grand Master of Masons to follow. A World Federation for Mental Health was formed at that Congress. With Brigadier General Dr. John Rawlings Rees, head of the British Psychological Warfare Department and of the Travestock Institute, named as its president. Co-director of the World Federation was Dr. Frank Fremont Smith. He was the chief medical officer of the Rockefeller-spawned Josiah Macy Foundation that would later be the primary funnel for the CIA MK Ultra Mind Control funding program. According to Nina Reidenauer, technical coordinator of the United States delegation to that Congress, the World Federation for Mental Health had been created upon the recommendation of the United Nations World Health Organization and UNESCO because they needed a non-governmental mental health organization with which they could cooperate. The vice presidents of the Congress again provide a sense of its direction. Dr. Hugh Crichton Miller was a founder of Travestock and vice president of the C.G. Jung Institute in Zurich, Switzerland. This blatantly anti-Semitic Jung himself was another vice president of the Congress. Dame Evelyn Fox was a leading light of the British eugenics movement. Lord Thomas Jeys Horder was president of the Eugenics Society of Great Britain. Dr. Winfred Overholser was a high-ranking representative of the Scottish Rite Masons and reportedly linked to German spy activities in the United States. And then there was Dr. Alfred Frank Treadgold, who was a member of Britain's Ministry of Health Committee on Sterilization. Providing additional insight into the goals of the manipulators of the WFMH are statements of Dr. G. Brock Chisholm. He was first director and later head of the World Health Organization of the United Nations. And Chisholm delivered an address to psychiatrists and government officials in Washington, D.C. back in 1945. And here's what he said. What basic psychological distortion can be found in every civilization of which we know anything about? The only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is morality, the concept of right and wrong. The reinterpretation and the eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belated objectives of all of psychotherapy. And there you have it. The objective of psychiatry and psychotherapy and psychology is to get you to give up on right and wrong. To make you believe that there is no right and wrong. That you decide what's right and what's wrong. There is no God, and you're free to choose to do whatever you want to whoever you want and whenever you desire. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send an email request, or call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing Mind Control, World Control by Jim Keith. It's an encyclopedia of mind control, and it covers a multitude of concepts and aspects of the implementation of how do you control people individually, like a salesman would control you by asking you the closing question, or how do you control whole societies, like all of the nation of Germany, needed to be reprogrammed to fit the New World Order? Or how do you get the people of the United States to adopt and to accept the United Nations? Well, what you do is you create a crisis to destabilize everybody's mind. Then you offer a solution, a one-world government through the United Nations. Then, confronted with this potential nuclear nightmare or the New World Order, one-world government of the United Nations, you will choose the lesser of the two evils. You really don't want either one. But your mind has been destabilized with this terror of, oh my God, they'll drop one of those bombs on Chicago and kill us all. So we're going to have to do what we don't want to. For instance, we're being put through this process right now with the war on terror. Now, if you take a look at the war on terror, it's as phony as a $3 bill because the war on terror is mind control. It's based on fear. You see, 3,000 people were killed on 9/11. Less than 400 people were killed between 1980 and 2001 here in the United States. In 21 years, that's 161 people a year. My goodness, we kill that many people on our highways here on a typical weekend, don't we, in the United States? I mean, it's common to kill 200, 300, 400 people on a weekend here in the United States. Now, we don't have a $37 billion agency in the Department of Transportation to prevent auto wrecks. But we're going to prevent terrorism in the United States and spend $37 billion, and then we're going to gut our Bill of Rights and our Constitution in the process. You see, your government has created this terror, this fear. They've appealed to your fear. Now they come along, now that they've given you the thesis, now they come along with the antithesis. My God, if we don't do something about this, well, then they're going to knock down every building in the country and kill you in the process. This then brings us to the synthesis. Well, what's the solution? Well, we have to give up some of our rights in order to give the government the power to find out who all these terrorists are to protect us from these terrorists. You would not have bought this program had the president come to you in 1995 and said, look, let's protect you from terrorism. And we want to create a $37 billion a year program to do that. We'll call it the Department of Homeland Security. And when you come in to get on an airplane, you'll have to have identification and spend an extra 2 hours and, you know, just go through. Now, it seems logical today. When the time comes, it will seem logical and reasonable for you to take the mark of the beast. In fact, you will get in line to get your mark of the beast. I see the other day they're now going to take eye scans and fingerprint scans of people that want to volunteer so that you can get on airplanes faster. You won't have to go through normal security. See, once you're checked out as being a good guy, you can just come in, have your eye scanned, get right on the airplane. Of course, you have to surrender all of your Bill of Rights in order to do that. And the people that have this instant access to the airplane don't tell you that they have surrendered their Bill of Rights in order to accomplish that end. So it's a choice that they have been induced to make. It's a part of mind control. So everybody who's getting on the airplane ahead of you is a mind-controlled robot. He's not thinking for himself. His thinking is being done for him, and his thinking is being done through his vanity. Hey, look at me. Ha, ha, ha. I get to go to the head of the line. So there. And he goes on, gets on the airplane. Mind control works like this also when we're talking about children playing. And one of them says, I dare you. I double dare you to do this or that. I remember a kid came to me and he said, you know, I'll bet you you couldn't climb to the top of that tower. It was the big water tower there in Eureka on between Henderson and Harris. And I looked at that tower and I said, yeah, it's pretty tall. And he said, I bet you're scared to climb up that tower. And then he went on a step or two further and he said, I bet you you're chicken. What's he appealing to? Vanity. And sure enough, you guessed it. Well, I'll show you that I'm not chicken. And so I proceeded right over to the tower and started climbing the tower. Now, here's the moral to the story. Who's in control of his mental faculties, me or my handler? Now, looking back on that, I can see that I was being mind-controlled by a kid. Yeah, he was one of my peers, of course, another kid about my age. But the moral to the story is it doesn't make any difference whether we're doing it to one kid or we're doing it to a group, or we're doing it to a nation, a civilization, or the whole world. The process works the same. All of us worldwide, every human being is motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And if you can't control your five motivators, you may rest assured that there's somebody out there who can and will control you through those motivators. Either for personal profit or for power or glory or for the good of mankind. I mean, after all, the people who are doing this probably really honest to God believe that they're doing society a great favor. So what basic psychological distortion can be found in every civilization of which we know anything about? And the only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is called morality and the concept of right and wrong. It's this reinterpretation and eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belated objectives of all psychotherapy. So the objective here through psychotherapy is to get you to reject right and wrong. And the only place that right and wrong comes from is from God. That's the guy who comes along and says, let me tell you, right and wrong. Now, George Bush comes along and he says, oh no, God's wrong. What you want to follow is psychotherapy. You want to follow the New World Order. You want to follow us because we can tell you what's right and what's wrong. We will let you decide morality. We will let you decide whether or not you want to watch pornography. We'll let you decide whether or not you want to go to flows. So they have opened up the floodgates in your public schools. 14-year-old girls are being told that the best way to be popular is to pull your pants down and let the neighbor boy investigate and have a little sexual gratification. You're going to love it, sweetheart, and so will he. Sexual experimentation is what we call sex education in school. The boys and girls at age 14 love it. Why shouldn't they? Unfortunately, there are penalties that have to be paid later. Premarital pregnancy is one, and sexually transmitted diseases is another, and then there's this guilt complex that comes from premarital pregnancies, and then there's alimony and child support and forced marriages and all kinds of social traumas that society has to pay for. You know, like, who's going to feed, clothe, and house all of these little children, you know, that are born out of wedlock and so on? And then we all sit back and we wonder, gee, why is society degenerating around us? Well, because we've lost our moral compass. Now, Chisholm also said that the people who have been taught to believe whatever they're told by their parents or their teachers are the people who are the menace to the world. Given these sentiments, that right and wrong do not exist, and that parents are the persons least fit for educating their children, can any excesses and crimes of the mental health field be a surprise? So, in the public schools, homeschool is a threat to this concept of mind control. I mean, my God, you know, if you people, you know, if you Mormons are out there educating your children to your Mormon theology and Mormon principles and Mormon values of right and wrong, it's a threat to the mind control handlers. We can't have that. That's why we want all you Mormons to send your children to public school and you Baptists and Catholics so we can have control of everybody's view of right and wrong. And we will rewrite the textbooks and we'll tell you what's right and wrong and good and bad. The words of the declaration issued by the National Institute for Mental Health in the United States further reveals that psychiatry has its masters even beyond the Nazis. Travestock. Or British aristocracy and the Freemasons. You see, principles of mental health cannot be successfully furthered in any society unless there is progressive acceptance of the concept of world citizenship. World citizenship can be widely extended among all peoples through applications of the principles of mental health. At a major turning point in world history, there is an obligation on social scientists and psychiatrists to attempt this new formulation. The manifestation of this is the border immigration policy of allowing the Mexicans to come across the border into the United States. For practical purposes, we are opening our borders to the entire world. And of course, the United States of America is the center for this new world order. America has to be brought down and the rest of the world has to be brought up to a mean level average. So we're going to open up the world to world citizenship. Of course, we have to. If we've got to have a one world government, we have to have a one world society, a one world religion, a one world political entity. Now, of course, this runs very counter to what God had intended. In fact, that's the purpose, if you'll remember, back at the Tower of Babel, was to divide the world and all of its cultures and peoples up into nations and nation states, so that each one of those nations and nation states would be sovereign, independent, and individual. God had a different plan for the world. So our conclusion is that God made a mistake, and we're going to fix his mistake, and we're going to start right here in the United States. So we opened our borders, and America, which was 90% white in 1960, is now 68% white and 32% colored, or 32% all others. And by the year 2050, it's going to be 50-50, and it'll be 38% white and 62%. Get that? 62%. All others. By the turn of the 21st century. Of course, that's 96 years from now, and we don't have to be too concerned about that now, do we? All right, now this is a pre-programmed plan, and we have to get you to accept it. And to get you to accept it, we have to sell you something that you don't want, don't need, can't use, and shouldn't have. It's called salesmanship at the individual level. It's called mind control at the national and international level. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.